Hello, we are Emma White
and David J. Lilly.
We're both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We're both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you right here.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or a creative type, or you spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkly chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Emma
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life. Hi, Emma. How are you? How was your holiday?
Hi, David. I'm great. Thank you. It was ace. Seems like a very long time ago already. A lot's happened since then, hasn't it?
It certainly has. And of course, you've been working on the new studio as well. How's that coming along?
Oh, well, it's currently kind of in bits, but but we are in and the benches are built. So, yeah, I'm just still got some electrical work to do and still got lots of tools to buy. And yeah, it's just a bit of a manic week. How are you? What's been going on in your world?
Well, it's just kind of been fairly crazy since they announced, obviously, last week that we're going to be appearing on the telly. Tonight, in fact, obviously, as this goes out on the Thursday morning. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be brilliant.
Isn't it bonkers?
Yeah.
It's such a relief to be able to actually tell people.
Yeah, it certainly is. It makes such a difference in that, you know, for when you think how long we've been doing it. Actually, that would be a really good point. If we finish off our backstory this morning each, we can then briefly talk about how we, you know, applied for all the glitters, though we're not allowed to obviously to tell people about the application process, because obviously the BBC have an embargo on that bit. But we can tell them, you know, our little personal stories. I'm sure they want to hear those. So, where do we go?
No spoilers,
that's for sure. So if I pick up from becoming a jeweler, where did I start? Where did I stop, I should say? I stopped at stained glass, didn't I? So yes, stained glass. Stained glass, I started full-time in 2006 as a business. I'd been doing it kind of part-time and as a hobby prior to that. But I had an opportunity to think about what I wanted to do and thought, well, if I don't do it now, I was aged 45 at the time, I probably wasn't going to do it at all. So I chucked in everything else. I downsized from a large flat to a small flat to reduce my mortgage, and off I went. And for 2 years, it really started building exceptionally well. And then, of course, come 2008, we had a recession, and it suddenly, my middle market just disappeared. People who were spending something from about £500 to £5,000 just disappeared. They hadn't got the money. And I was really quite worried for a while, but after about 6 months, I started getting business doing restoration, in that people were finding they weren't making any money on the money they were saving because their mortgage had gone down. So they decided to invest it in their houses. And that was really useful for me, in that I was starting to either restore broken work or, which was even more interesting, was recreate Victorian and some kind of Art Deco windows where they'd been removed from years gone by. And we were then, you know, guesstimating what they might have looked like based on the period and, you know, what the client wanted. And that was really fun to do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, stained glass was kind of really big for me. And it was through to about 2011. And I'd been doing it for 5 years full time at that point. And I wasn't bored with it, but I'd done an awful lot of peacocks and an awful lot of kingfishers at that point. I know. It sounds terrible, doesn't it? Oh my God, too many peacocks, really.
Darling.
I don't like repeating myself. I know. Yeah,
First world problems. Yeah. No, I understand, though. It's good to face new challenges, isn't it?
Creatively, don't like repeating myself.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it certainly is. And Krish and I were sitting having a coffee one morning. It's like, I don't know, a Thursday morning or something. And we were talking about this, and he said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I don't really know. And he said, well, have you thought of going to uni? because I'd never been to uni. And I said, well, I'm not really academic. I don't think it's my kind of thing. And he said, well, don't be so stupid. You know, why don't you have a look? And at that point, a fly fell out of the sky. So it didn't fly down. It literally kind of fell out of the sky onto the saucer of my coffee cup and just sat there. And I thought, ooh, what, you know, what's all that about? This is weird. And so Chris said, that's a sign. He said, what do you mean it's a sign? Yes. And so he looked up, you know, what does it mean if a fly enters your life? You know, and he said, well, you're going to have a lot of change very quickly.
Wow.
So that was a kind of an unexpected omen, shall we say? And so we then thought, okay, what are we going to do about this idea of going to uni? And it so happens, obviously, we lived in Brighton and Hove. There is a university in Brighton, which is the University of Brighton, which is very much an arts university. It does all sorts of other things, but, you know, it was founded on the Brighton Arts School. So we looked up, and there was a course called 3D Design and Craft. And it seemed like a really interesting way of expanding the skills that I had with stained glass, in that you worked with wood, metal, ceramics, and polymers. And weirdly, this was the Thursday. On the Monday, the new course started. So talk about things happening dramatically, in that this fly have just popped in saying things are going to change very quickly.
Wow.
I know. Even more strangely, a friend of ours worked in the application office. And so messaged him saying, are there spaces left on this course, on this? It was a BA. And how do I apply? He said, well, it starts Monday. There are spaces. You'll need to phone this person on Monday. Tell them who you are, what you've done, what you want to do. And they will tell you how to proceed. So did that on Monday, got this phone call back saying, you have to come in an hour. You have to bring evidence of what you've done, and you're going to meet so-and-so. So I threw it all together, put it on a laptop, and kind of charged into the university. It was pissing down with rain. It was one of those torrential days. I got there, drowned as a rat, saw this wonderful guy called Patrick. He brought in another lecturer named Tanya, and they chatted with me, and they said, right, we're just going to go outside, we're just going to have a chat, and then we're going to come back in and tell you whether or not we're going to give you a place. And they literally walked out the door, closed it, opened the door, came back in, and they said, right, you've got a place, you start at 3 o'clock this afternoon. And so that was, the fly was very much correct.
Oh my goodness.
Mad, isn't it?
That's insane. And I worked for 2 years to get my university place. You just saw a fly and wandered in.
Exactly. There you go. You didn't notice the fly, clearly, otherwise you could have gone 2 years earlier.
Clearly, I could have cut out a whole load of stuff. That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
That's terrific. So you must have had a lovely time while you were there. I mean, those years of pure creative indulgence are so special.
They are. I was blown away by it. And I did 3 years full-time, and full-time meant being in 5 days a week on this course as well. So I just threw myself into it. And
yeah,
I did.
It was for me too.
Yeah, I did bring in glass now and again into the things that I created there. But it was brilliant to work in all these other materials. And I did, in my second year in small metals, work in jewellery. I did a project that was based around liminal space and jewellery. And that was fun to do. And that was my first real dabble into making jewellery. And it didn't persuade me at that point that I should follow it, because I was just trying all these different things. And so I wasn't convinced by any of them as a kind of permanent path through after the BA. Actually, what I did after the BA was I was enjoying being at uni so much, I went and did an MA.
Did you?
Yeah, and I did that in... So I got my first in 3D design and craft, and went on to do an MA in sustainable design. So that took me all the way through to 2017. And that was kind of fun. And then I really felt as though I wanted to do something in the way of supporting people who are learning, because I'd, you know, being the more mature student, a lot of people, the younger ones, you know, came to me and asked me questions when they didn't feel confident about going to lecturers or technicians and things. And so I kind of, without meaning to, kind of carved out this kind of support niche, even though I was, you know, one of the students. Half of the reason for doing the MA was to actually enable me to then, you know, apply to become a lecturer. But I then discovered, especially with Brighton, that they wanted people who had or were studying PhDs. And I had no desire to do a PhD. So I actually ended up running a small college just down the road in Brighton called the Self-Managed Learning College.
Oh, wow.
And while I was there, that's when I started working in copper and doing fold forming, which is something that I'd learned while at uni. And the fold forming, I was getting bigger and bigger and bigger with my stuff, and I was getting less and less enamored by it. So I started taking all the scrap copper, using the same technique in miniature. And that's when I discovered I was loving making jewelry. So that was 2018, 2020.
Fab.
I launched myself, so to speak, onto the waiting public. Then we had a pandemic. So talk about timing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, 2020, suddenly, what did we discover?
Yeah.
We discovered this TV program called All That Glitters. And I'd kind of heard about it.
And wasn't it such a relief, because it was right in lockdown, wasn't it, when it came out? And for me, it was such a, it was so lovely. It was like some light entertainment about something I was desperately missing, having been forced away from the bench and actually being a bloody homeschooler, which was never my ambition. Hats off to you if you do that through choice, but it was never my choice. And it was just amazing. And I was the hugest fan of the show. I absolutely loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Was hooked. Was absolutely
me too.
Hooked.
And it was Chris's business partner, Hass, who had said to me, are you going to watch this show? And I'd forgotten all about it. And I came out and I thought, this is really lovely, because it's a competition, but the people are not being overtly competitive, and not the I'm going to smash this type of macho shithead way that a lot of these competitions want contestants to be. So I thought, when they said, you know, we're accepting applications for series two, I thought, why not? Why not? This could be fun. You know, this could be something that would be a challenge. So that was kind of the remainder of my kind of creative journey, just a whiz through to All That Glitters. What about yours? So we left you at university crying your eyes out on your lecturer's shoulder, I seem to recall.
Yes, that was a wonderful time. I really enjoyed my time at university. I did contemplate going back and studying some more, but honestly, I just needed to make some money. I was so skint. I come from quite a modest background, and I needed to get out there. Just needed to get out there. So I'd actually done a support study in animation, and randomly I thought, I know, I could bring together my metal making skills and my love of the animation and make models. So I sat down and wrote some letters off to some animation companies, and I decided I really wanted to stay kind of focused around the sort of north of England. There's not a great deal going on in the way of animation in Scotland. There's a little bit. I didn't kind of envision myself doing the big London thing, being a small town girl, so I thought I'd kind of stick with the kind of north of England, where I was quite familiar, having got some strong roots there. My family originally Liverpudlian. So I thought, oh, that'd be good. But unfortunately, my geography is really, really bad. It's really bad. And I thought that Bristol was just south of Manchester, bearing in mind that I am, you know, when you're in Scotland, I was up in Dundee, like anything kind of south of Newcastle is down south. So I was like, oh yeah, Bristol's a lot of animation going on there. So I applied to a few places in Bristol, and then was really delighted to be asked to go down and do some work for somebody. Then when I looked on the map, I thought, Jesus, it's miles away.
Brilliant.
So anyway, I went anyway. Ended up working for the best part of a year on what was Chicken Run, which was the Aardman Animation first feature film. So I soldered together lots and lots of chicken legs and lots of chicken leg parts. And it was quite a tough job, actually. It had to be precise within 0.1 of a millimetre. Those little chicken legs were about, I don't know, 3 inches high, but they had all the same amount of joints.
Wow.
Same amount of joint as a real chicken's leg.
Wow.
So you can imagine they were pretty intricate. And I made a few other bits of animals and people and stuff, but it was mainly chickens. And it was a huge production, you know, there was loads going on in Bristol. Anyway, it was good fun. I met some really lovely people. And so my very first claim to fame is that I've got my name on the credits of Chicken Run. Woohoo!
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. It was only quite a short period of time, but it was good fun. Anyway, so that sort of naturally came to a conclusion as the film was finished. And I probably could have stayed in Bristol, but my heart was really in the north of England. So I toddled back up to Merseyside, where my family are originally from. and moved in with my Auntie Barbara. And we shared a flat for a time and we had a really nice time. And that was when I kind of set up my first little workshop and started to make some bits and bobs of jewellery. And I kind of made this jewellery collection in the space of about 3 days because somebody who I'd met at New Designers, the big exhibition a lot of graduates take part in, had taken some of my little pots and small silver sculptures that I'd been making and said, oh, could you make some jewellery to go with this? So I just kind of banged this jewellery out without really a great deal of thought. And it sold like hotcakes.
Fantastic.
In a way that was great and in a way that was really bad, because it was great because I was really on the bones of my arse and really had, you know, no money and was kind of struggling financially. And it sold and I was like, phew. But because it sold, I kind of got stuck in the rut of making it again and again. So I did that for about, I don't know, probably 6 years I made that collection for before I got brave enough to say, I'm just not making that anymore. It is not setting my world on fire.
Right.
And I started on a new collection, which was all about kind of stamping poetry into silver. And it was a continuation of something I'd done in my degree, but it was more commercial. And at the same time, kind of personalized jewelry is becoming quite big. And I was already sort of doing it and fitted with it. So it kind of went quite well. But then I did the same thing again and kind of got stuck. I moved into doing some retail and I opened a shop with another jeweler friend of mine, Sarah Lawrence, who's one of my closest friends. And we had a shop for a time and we sold the work of about 25 other contemporary jewelers, all kind of UK based, making handmade jewelry. So that kind of, and I also was teaching by then. I started teaching in Bradford College.
Okay.
Night classes, did that a couple of nights a week, and then went off and got qualified in teacher training. So
right.
That was fun, lots of work, lots of studying.
I bet.
And then lots of things changed around funding and kind of boring stuff. And I decided to open my own sort of small jewelry school in my workshop, which was directly above the shop. So that's kind of when the teaching thing came in for me. That was probably about 15 years ago.
Okay.
And interesting that you referred to the recession as being quite a big thing. It was quite a big thing in my journey as well, because it really, really hit sales in the shop.
I bet.
Very hard. And that became quite difficult. And ultimately, Sarah decided she didn't want to do it anymore. So she kind of moved off and I carried on with it for a bit. And at that time I was going through quite a lot on a personal level, got divorced. And then I met somebody new and we decided to get married and we got married and then I was pregnant with my first child. So it kind of,
wow.
These kind of big life events, I think sometimes they serve you really well, making you kind of rethink stuff.
Yep.
So I kind of looked at everything I was doing. I was teaching every night. I was running the shop during the day. I was trying to make as well. I was selling online by this point through Not on the High Street, and that was going really well. But I was just working like silly, silly hours. And I just knew I couldn't kind of continue it all. So I sort of looked at each bit of the business and really decided that the retail bit was taking a lot of energy and not actually kind of like doing me many favors. So ultimately, I decided to let that go. And I kind of wound up the shop and I think I finished on the Friday, handed the keys back on the Friday end of play and went into labour on the Saturday and had Henry on the Monday.
Oh, God.
So it was kind of he was like waiting until it was finished, like, right, now I'm coming. So, yeah. So then, of course, life kind of took a bit of a turn for you know, it's turned for the worst. It took a huge turn and I sort of rapidly spat out three babies in the space of quite a short period of time. And, you know, really enjoyed being a mum, but obviously that kind of took me away from the bench again. So this has kind of shifted backwards and forwards depending on what was going on in my life. And I guess my creativity kind of came out more maybe when I was working on commissions. So I'd take on maybe not, I don't do loads of commission work, maybe one a month maybe, but that was where probably my kind of proudest pieces have come from in the last 10 years. And I've really enjoyed it. I've worked with so many amazing people, inspired by kind of words and stories and storytelling, and I'm quite a people-y person, and I love to hear people's tales. That kind of fed really nicely into that. And yeah, so the storytelling thing is kind of what's seen me through. And then, you know, we had that horrible period of you know, that big global pandemic that we thought was going to wipe it all out. So it, for me, on a personal level, Mabel was just, it's my youngest child, was just about to start at preschool and do 30 hours. And my older two boys were at school, and I was like, right, this is the year. This is the year. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get to the bench. I had all these ideas. I was really excited, really, really excited about getting back to the bench. And then, oh no, that was not to be. Instead, the preschools would close and the boys would be sent home from school. And before you knew it, I was trying to teach them all sorts of grammar that I either never learned or have completely forgotten. And it was very torturous and a very kind of, you know, first world problems kind of really. But yeah, horrendous time for lots of people in lots of ways.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, so that was kind of what happened. But I guess, I mean, an interesting thing about the kind of whole family side and all of that was that when I had Mabel, who is my third child, she mm-hmm. was actually, a little spoiler here, she was actually a little whoops. So we had contemplated having a third and then decided that really we were too old. So that was that. But so that kind of took me away from the bench at that in those years when she came along. And at that time, I kind of had this idea ticking over in my mind for quite some time about creating a platform, an online platform that was specifically for handmade jewellery. Yeah. And I was quite excited about doing that, but kind of had put it a bit on my, like, once pregnant with Mabel and realized, having tried and failed in the past, to actually be making jewelry with a baby at your feet, which just does not work.
No, not my idea of fun either.
I kind of thought, well, maybe this is something I can do, you know, maybe I can kind of like be build this platform and doing some photography and promoting people and doing the associated social media. And I was quite keen on doing that because I think there was a bit of a gap in the market mm-hmm. for it. And also there's, you know, it's quite a lonely, you know, we tend to sort of work in our little workshop. I was really keen to kind of create this little sort of micro community thing.
Sure. That's a really great idea.
So that was sort of a big part. So like everything I've done has been around jewelry, but I've done lots of different things. So, I mean, the amazing thing about, you know, All Glitters, when that came on the TV and we were sort of mid-lockdown and I was in homeschooling hell, and just was that it was just this kind of light relief and you know, it was something I knew about and something I was passionate about, and I just was the hugest fan of the series. I really loved it, and I kind of watched it along with my jewelry students and also the jewelry makers on WhatsApp. So oh, we right. kind of all watched it and we were all like binging comments to each other, and it was really lovely because it was right sort of contact, and it was something at a time when we weren't allowed to have classes and, you know, one-to-one contact was just banned, and we had that, so that was really special. So it kind of came along like just at the right time.
Fantastic.
And interestingly, when the All the Glitters final was on, it was actually scheduled for the first class that we were allowed to have as per the regulations at the time.
Oh wow.
Scheduled on the same at the same time on the same night, and all my students were like, oh, so excited to get back to class, and then like, but it is actually the final of All the Glitters that night. And I was like, yep, it is, I really want to watch it. So I said, to tell you what, shall we ditch the class, we'll shove the term back a week and instead come to mine and we'll have an all glitters party.
Brilliant.
So that's what we decided to do.
Fantastic.
And we were allowed to, it was literally when you were just allowed to have people back in your houses. So it felt kind of special. We all wore something sparkly. Everybody brought a dish and we had some bubbles and we sat and watched the final together and really enjoyed it.
Brilliant.
I was the hugest of fans. And I guess at that stage, people were saying to me already, Are you going to apply? And I was a bit like, yeah, I am. And I kind of knew that I was going to apply and that I really wanted to get in. So it was great to kind of have that validation. So then obviously I went through the application kind of, there's a whole process.
Yep, there sure is.
Behind applying and lots of levels. So, you know, just because you've had a phone call saying, please apply, does not mean you are in by any stretch of the imagination. So I went through that and kind of at every stage, I was like, yes, yes. And I was like, oh my God, I might actually get on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I remember getting right down to the last few and being told it's looking really good, but it's not a given yet.
Yes, I remember that.
And thinking, oh, please. Like, I really wanted it. Like, I really wanted it very much. And then when I got that call, it was just, it was great. It was like a million dreams all at once. Fantastic. I was so excited.
Do you remember where you were when you got the call?
I'm going to sound really bijou when I say this because it's not actually a true reflection of my day-to-day life, but I was in a spa, darling.
Of course you were. Yes. It's far more glamorous than where I was.
I was having a little bistro lunch in my dressing gown and fluffy slippers with a friend. We'd sort of decided, you know, post-lockdown, these were all the things that we'd sort of said to ourselves during lockdown, that when this finishes, we'll go for a spa day. So we did. I was just so excited. I really wanted to scream, but like I couldn't because I was in a restaurant. What about you? Where were you when you got a call?
I was driving along the A27.
Right.
So it's nothing as glamorous as yours at all, literally. And because I'd programmed people from the production company into my phone, when the name came up, I said to Chris, I'm going to have to pull over. And I was thinking, where's the nearest lay-by? And thankfully, there was one about 50 yards ahead. So I kind of like dashed into that and had put the phone on speaker and said, hi, yeah, it's, you know, hang on a minute, I'm just pulling over. And she said, oh, that's good that you've pulled over. And then told me.
Yeah.
And then before I said anything, because it was on speaker, Chris was going, yes, yes. And I think, hang on. So it was a very exciting moment. It was a very exciting moment. And then it's like, oh my God, this is all real now. And of course, it's all going to be real this evening. Have you got a party set up for this evening for the first episode of All the Glitters?
I am having some the aforementioned students that we talked about. So they're going to come and watch it with me in my new studio with my other half and the kids and just a couple of friends that live very local.
Fabulous.
So, yeah, a little shindig would be great. I'm mm-hmm. Are you nervous though? I'm a little bit nervous.
I think I will be nervous when it starts playing, but at the moment I'm fine.
How did you feel when you saw the trailer?
Mixed bag. I was thinking, oh my God, is this how I appear in Tom's television? It was fine because I knew I had played to the cameras anyway, so I could hardly expect me to be anything other than, shall we say, characterful in my appearance.
Were you a drama queen?
Absolutely. Yes, unlike you.
I just don't think I sound like myself, but obviously I do. I'm always really shocked at how Scottish I sound. I don't really sound very Scottish in my own head.
Because you're used to hearing yourself.
Yeah, I know. Silly, really. Anyway, yeah, I think when I saw the full length trailer with the music and everything on, that gave me full on butterflies, adrenaline rush thing that I experienced when we were filming.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't sleep. I think we watched it at like I don't know, just before we're going to bed, which in retrospect was probably not a good idea. And I just lay in bed, like wide awake, just feeling the whole like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, kind of thing. I don't think I fell asleep till about 3 a.m. just from seeing the trailer. And obviously, like, I imagine like you, my social media's kind of blown up, which has been so far lovely.
Yes, I've had all sorts of friend requests from people all over the world.
Oh, have you now?
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yes.
It's been okay. delete, 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 delete.
Yes. I haven't had those. I think your market must be hotter than mine, David.
Oh, I don't know. I really don't know. Yeah, I think on that note, we better round this up because we're probably chatting away and time is flying. So you're going to have fun with your friends,
yes, et cetera,
and family this evening watching it. I'm going to have fun with friends and family doing the same thing.
Yep.
And then we're going to record after we've seen it, aren't we? And then we're going to post these out every week, aren't we, while the show's on?
We are. We'll do one a week while the show's on, and then we'll go back to our every other week because, frankly, I think my head might explode.
Well, go and enjoy. Have a fabulous time.
Yep.
And I will see you soon.
Hey, David, are you going to wear...
Take care.
Are you going to wear the beard glitter that I gave you?
Ooh, that's a good idea. I think I should, shouldn't I?
I think you should. If you do, will you send me a picture?
Oh, yeah. There'll definitely be pictures.
All right, my love. Have an amazing time.
You too. Speak to you soon.
Fabulous.
Lots of love. Bye.
Speak to you soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us in another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track, Optopi, which does our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.